Blog Talk Radio.
Ha! First you don't succeed, ladies and gentlemen, try again. So last night I go ahead and I get ready to do this show for you guys and do my shout out, and what happens when I get on? Well, here's what I can tell you what my reaction was. Yep, that was pretty much how my reaction was to that. And of course, right after that, I was very annoyed, so I responded like this. However, thankfully, when it came down to that, I rose above that, and sure enough, guess what ended up happening? But trusty old Chewbacca, I was successful, and I went on my old platform on YouTube and did it in person. So at first you don't succeed, folks, try again. And yesterday was all about giving praise and shouting out people and giving recognition for people. When technical difficulties happen, it's frustrating for me because, number one, it's annoying, especially when I have things in place. In all honesty, this show is taking place because tomorrow is going to be epic as we have some new friends coming to the F4L headquarters. The Jits Kings Productions are going to be coming on here tomorrow. Promotions, rather. So Jits Kings Promotions are coming on here tomorrow to talk about their involvement, how they started, what looks to be the most clear-cut, cutting-edge, and well-organized events in modern MMA and jiu-jitsu and whatnot. And, you know, as someone who competed a long time ago, it's going to be fun to kind of look back at my own career and where, in looking how far the sport in general has become. And how it used to be taboo to talk and, you know, be proud of the fact that you did martial arts and competed in these events versus, back when I was growing up, you didn't talk about doing martial arts because it was just another thing to give people an idea to try to challenge you and try to be annoying, and people would, look at it not as cool as it is now, which is ridiculous. I'm someone who has appreciation for people who have commitment in doing whatever it is that they do that gives them meaning. There's some things I haven't, got into, certain sports or whatever else, but I don't think that the sports I did are any better or worse than some others. I think if you're committed to something, doesn't matter what it is, I think that you should put your best foot forward and put all your heart into it, regardless of what it is, whether it be, sports, arts, crafts, whatever the case may be. Even if you're going out fishing, why not? Why is that any less? People who give dancers a hard time, or cheerleaders, or if you're a sports person, guess what? All of those things are commitment, physical, and demanding of people, commitment. And if you don't have those kind of abilities to focus in on those things, it's kind of hard to do, right? Kind of hard to work in those, game plans on that. Now, so let me, this is more of a show to kind of make sure everything is worked out with the technical difficulties, which is why it's not as long as our normal show. But what I do want to do is talk about a few different various things and whatnot. But, a young man who, Jaden Brooks, actually, who, says he wanted to, when it came to music, I asked people yesterday, kind of what music would you have for an entrance theme for our YouTube wrestling show, and I'm putting together the playlists for Spotify for our entrance songs for our superstars. And Jaden Brooks, who's on our show, on Wednesday night. Well, it used to be Wednesday nights. Now, because it's going to be the old format, we're going to be doing 3 shows a month. You know, he'll be featured in there somewhere, let alone. But because of YouTube and copyrights and so forth, obviously, I can't have interest music, which is annoying. But I thought, well, just because I can't do it there doesn't mean I can't share it on Spotify, so that if people want to hear the music that we have inspired by our superstars, they can go on there and listen to it. So that's kind of what I've been working on. I have like a little rough draft one right now currently, but I'm going to be, updating that and, whatnot. And I have been in contact. And, one of the great things about doing the show that I do is the fact that, before when my son and I began this kind of whole extravaganza way back when, if we would do everything together, we'd have to come up with everything, all the storylines, the characters, why is this happening and whatnot. My background in pro wrestling helped in that aspect. My son brought the kind of current age and current pop culture references to that mix. And, family is a great selling point because a lot of people can relate to those things. And I think it's great whenever people can do things as a family, all honesty. So, there's that. Now, going forward, when I was starting this entity, because my son was going to do some other things on YouTube and whatnot, and once in a while he'll still come pop in and he'll give his 2 cents on some things, and I still value his opinion because I kind of showed him how to do a lot of this stuff, and we kind of, did this whole thing, Dream Masters and the Women Warriors of Wrestling as a whole together. But when I was looking at doing something different and trying to, incorporate real people and show the world these amazing athletes, actors, dancers, inspirational people or whatever, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to be building these people. So one of the best things is being able to reach out to these various people and say, hey, I would like to, honor you by adding you to this roster so the world can see you in action. Which is a rare thing. It's kind of it's funny and interesting. Coming from the outside, trying to put myself in their shoes, here's this person who wants to make me a cartoon wrestler. And I don't really think a lot of people at first think too much of it, especially if they're not into pro wrestling in general. But I've been fortunate enough that people have been, kind of on board and game for it because it's a way to get their names out there, even if wrestling's not their thing. Maybe they're actors, dancers, whatever the case may be, models, bodybuilders and whatnot. But in retrospect, their names are out there. And when we put them in these, matches and so forth, and people see them grow on our shows, it creates a fan base for them. So, which is an awesome thing because when I was going to cut down the show and just get rid of it altogether because I didn't feel like it was appreciated what I was doing, the fans really were upset because our stars mean more to them than the show might even mean to some of our stars. But, for the most part, a lot of our stars and a lot of people we feature are based on real people who are real beasts, real women warriors in general, and real dream masters, people who are working hard to achieve their goals, dreams, and whatnot. And when you talk about people that we feature, it's always, humbling to see, and it's always a great experience to when I get to reach out to these people and they're so on board that they're willing to say, oh, yeah, I'd like to do this. And they're so, involved in their creation because ultimately I'm making the cartoon version of you. But after that, it's your created wrestler that does everything else. I have no control over it after that. And that's kind of the staple that we've had for years. Sometimes everything works out well. Sometimes it doesn't. it's a learning experience, kind of like life. You're not going to win everything sometimes, but it's all about what you learn from that one match and how you can get it back in the future. And when I look at all the growth of all the amazing people over the years that, since not over the years, this is kind of a newer thing. This has been really since, 2019, 2020, I started this initiative. And it's been a really great time watching these people rise and seeing these people grow into their genres and their niche and do really well in it. People like JoJo, the bodybuilder, JoJo, the model Sebastian, Jaden Brooks, who was saying that when it came to music, he's into inspirational stuff. You know, I respect that, motivational. So because, when it came to music, that's kind of what brought me to where I was just talking about, is how I was incorporating, what music would represent you. And he was saying something motivational. And I said, I think that's a great idea. So I, obviously recommended this song, and that's going to be on his playlist for him. But, in retrospect, when I did my video yesterday, when I did the shout outs, I wanted to make sure I incorporated the fact that, the people who I shouted out are all hardworking individuals whose dedication and whose commitment to whatever it is that they're doing should be recognized. I don't think there's a barrier or a age requirement to want to do something more with your life. So I shout people out, young, old, male, female, it doesn't matter. Everyone has a goal in life. Everyone should have a goal in life, and everyone works towards a dream. And I think it's important that people follow through with those things. And, the other part of it is someone said on social media last night that, always be original. And I think that's it definitely is a thing. This person's a wrestler and does competing and stuff like that. So I always looked at things like that as you have to be unique in the sense where everyone's going to have the same kind of mindset. Everyone who's at a wrestling competition is there to wrestle, but it's the individuals themselves that will stand out between other wrestlers. Everyone knows how to do various things in Greco-Roman wrestling, right? Sometimes people are stronger, faster, quicker than others, but it's that extra flair, is what we used to call it, that makes someone stand out to someone else. Someone that has a personality, I feel, will do really well within the sport of wrestling or even MMA or sports in general. If you're playing football, you're playing football or soccer or American football or whatever, or you're playing baseball or whatever, everyone's going to be a baseball player. Everyone's going to be a football player. Even if you have a certain position on that sport, in order to stand out, you have to do that something extra that puts you and separates you from the other people, because you're not the same person as the other defenseman or the other quarterback or the other kicker or the other linebacker. And you need to stand out. When you're looking at, wrestling, for example, it could be as simple as a singlet design because, in wrestling, it's not the most flattering outfits, right? But they're, used to it. It's a wrestling attire is something that people who are familiar with those things, the singlets and whatnot, we get used to it. And it doesn't bother us because we know what that work goes into. And that's one of the reasons why conditioning is important in general. But it's all about bringing that extra flair, and it could be just adding a design to your singlet, making a singlet your part of your personality. I had a few singlets, actually. I had one that had, skulls and crossbones on it, and it was prior to my whole Jazz Vengeance, my whole, nicknames or anything like that. And when I became Jazz in middle school, because that's when the kids started calling me Jazz, that's when I kind of added the Jazz, moniker in the back or the front, and then whatever the school's name or the designs were on the front. But, you know, Greco-Roman wrestling I did in high school, so what I would have to do is add the Jazz to whatever the school's colors were, which is blue and white, for those people who don't know. And, you know, that's kind of what helped me stand out. And what made me stand out even more so is the fact that the students were the ones, my fellow classmates were the ones who gave me the name Jazz. And then freshman year of high school was when Vengeance came into play. Vengeance came in because I was the unofficial bully buster, because I'm not afraid to stand up and speak up when someone else isn't able to. We are all in these situations sometimes where, you know, especially back then I looked at it where, you know, one of the go-to, you know, questions that parents will ask their kids when there's an issue at school is, where was your teachers? And, you know, how come no one knows these things? And the reality is kids are crafty. Bullies aren't stupid. They're obnoxious, but they're not stupid. Now, clearly, most bullies are not going to be so abreezen to do so in front of people, especially where they're most places now there's a zero tolerance for bullying, which absolutely there should be no such thing. There should be no bullying in general. People should be respectful of each other and not trying to, you know, make someone else's life miserable because someone else has not fulfilled their own goals or doesn't have their commitment or it isn't them. And I don't care how many, you know, research things I did. I did do a lot of researches on bullying and stuff like that because, I mean, I've been battling bullies since day one, not necessarily my own, because I learned at a young age, at some point you do have to stand up and not take it. That's the first step, is admitting that you're not the victim and just saying, you know what, no more. Because once you take that power away from the bully, then that's when they start to unravel and you see that they're not as tough as they thought they were. You'll notice most bullies, for the most part, will have an entourage of people around them to make sure that no one else can kind of get in on that. They want someone else to laugh whatever the pointless jokes are they're going to make at someone else's expense. But the reality is when you take out that, you take that out of the equation, and you take away what makes them, which is that fear factor they impose on people, they're powerless and they look like jokes. It's like, picture this. How many people like dad jokes out there? Bullies, look at bullies whenever they start mocking you and making fun of you, like they're just telling dad jokes. The only people who are going to be laughing are their lackeys who are laughing just because they can laugh, when in reality they look like a bunch of hyenas who are just sitting there waiting. And then when you feed into that and allow that to bother you, which, you know, of course it can bother someone, can get under your skin. And it's hurtful to have someone try to cut you down and make you less of a person when they're cutting names and calling this, that, and the other thing. And it's old wives' tale, and it is old. This is old advice from people who are older who will say, well, sticks and stones will break your bones. But research studies and many, many countless books and everything else and accounts will say that that advice is outdated and ill-advised. And the other one is just ignore them. That is also an ill-fated and something that will not be helpful. Here's what happens if you ignore a bully. They'll work even harder to get your attention until you take away what they really are afraid you're going to do, and that's take away their power over you. Because that's where bullies get their power from. They feed on your fear of them, and they get off on that. Isn't that ridiculous? That for someone who wants to make you miserable, they feel good about themselves to make you feel poorly because that fulfills something in them. And, you know, and I don't care how many people say, well, you know, it all comes from either comes from home or comes from how, something they learn. I don't care about that. It's up to the person's individual reactions and the other the person individually who takes the chance to do this. I don't look at excuses when there comes to bullying. You're either a bully or not. And, you know, to say, well, he came from a bad childhood or he's bullied at home. Okay, he's bullied at home. But why does that mean he has to go out and make someone else feel like crap when he leaves his home? Why is that relevant? Why is that a worthy excuse to bully? It doesn't really. And, you know, one of the many things I do is I go around to schools and so forth, and I talk to kids about bullying and overcoming bullying and also going after the goals and dreams and not listening to what the haters in the world have to say, because everyone has an opinion on something someone else does, and everyone has some type of critique on people's, you know, passions or whatever else, because it makes them feel important. It makes them feel like they have some type of relevance. To be clear and to be fair, there are people in your life who you do value their opinions over others. But if people's opinions are negative and they're holding you down and they're dragging you down and they're hurting your heart, that's going to be the opposite of what it's supposed to. I'm going to tell you a story, and this is a true story, and this is something that I am grateful for, and I'm also a little ashamed of. We all have things we're proud of and things we're not so proud of, and this is one of the things I am regretful in my life on. There was this long time period after I graduated high school, when I was in the middle of, you know, pro wrestling, got injured, went to college or whatever. There was a long time period where the person I was in high school and up until that point, where the person I was to stand up for bullies and to, you know, assert myself, not to let someone walk on over me and to treat me poorly, there was a time when I was like, I just laughed it off. Oh, no big deal. And I allowed people to think that they had power over me. And I allowed people into my life who I, you know, considered at that point friends. And this is going to be a topic that, you know, we address here and there, is the influences you have in your life. Some people are going to be positive and some people are not so much. I have the F4L, the leader of the F4L. I am the leader of the F4L. We founded the F4L back in 1996 officially, but the foundation for it was really starting to get laid down way before that. And the reason the whole thing came to pass is because I wasn't the only one who had blood family who were not positive people, who didn't see us as individuals and didn't see us for the amazing people we are. In fact, they did the opposite. They were more detrimental to us than they were helpful. I came from a family where everyone from the moment I was born already had an opinion of me, because my mother had me at a young age and had me, you know, outside the marriage realm of things. And I grew up with no father, whatever. My mother was both. And my mother, well, honestly, was tougher than most guys in my life anyway. And, you know, what does that do for certain people? How do you go from there? Well, it's like this. If I use this excuse about it comes from home, and that's what makes a bully, then that kind of puts away that kind of a trope that it comes from home, because I was insulted by my own blood family most of my life, and I had no intention to ever be a bully. In fact, I had every intention on standing up for the people who had no voice. And it's a tough thing to talk about, because you have to be able to understand that sometimes when you have situations at home where the people aren't as positive or aren't as supportive, that has to be on you and you alone who makes the decision to be your own person. That's tough, right? You live in a family, you're supposed to, in, you know, in because of how certain things are written or whatever, You're taught to honor and respect your, you know, whoever is in charge, maybe mother, father, guardian, or whatever. But what if they are the ones who are breaking you down? This is not the case for everybody, and in each case is individual, but to say that, you know, when someone is mean at home, you have to do that as well is a bogus statement by bullies, which is just another excuse because you don't want to take full acknowledge of the fact that you're a bully, right? So it's easier to pass it off on, well, you know, my dad, you know, picks on me at home. Well, so what? Your dad picks on you at home. That doesn't mean you can go out there and pick on someone else just because your dad treats you poorly. See, the truth be told, you know, when the F4L, when the foundation was really starting to come down, was when I was in my early teens, when I was old enough to start seeing that my blood family that I'm around are not, don't have the same values I do. And that's tough for a kid, right? You know, of course, you know, few and far between. I had some relatives were more, you know, acceptable than others. I had some family that were very helpful in helping and, you know, getting me where I am. And I'm respectful of those people. But there was certainly enough of them that they were the opposite. They would, you know, talk about my mother behind her back or talk about me to my face or behind my back or to be seen as the family and to be seen as, quote, the black sheep by my own blood is ridiculous. And the other part was because their disdain for myself, a lot of the things that I would accomplish were often diminished to nothing. And they were made to be nothing. But I knew they were something, right? When I was growing up on a mat, and remember, I did freestyle tournaments way before I did everything else later. I mean, I started martial art training when I was 4, and I started competing in what we call freestyle tournaments when I was 5. So from 5 to 18, I had a lot of these competitions that I would enter. Did I have my family in the crowd cheering me on and saying, go get them and congratulations when I win? No. Not always. My grandmother, who was responsible for me getting to martial arts and then also paying when I was 9, and she was starting to come down with dementia and Alzheimer's, and she knew that. So what she did is she met with my sensei at the time. Of course, I wouldn't find this out to years later, but she met with him when I was 9, and she saw the passion I had. And she saw also the commitment he had and the investment he had in me. She saw that he would, you know, the school was invested in me because I was one of their top students. And when it came to competing, that, you know, I was probably the master of human chess. So even back then, that was exciting. And also, I wasn't the biggest kid in the world either. I think I talked about that last time. I was a small, scrawny, skinny little kid. And when I say skinny, you could see my bones most of the time. Growing up, I was a picky eater. And, you know, I still loved all fruits and vegetables, which is, you know, different than all the other kids in the world. And still to this day, I like a lot more foods than other people do. But, you know, when it came to fruits and vegetables, I loved all those things. And yes, I like certain other like meats and stuff like that. But as a kid growing up, it had to be very bland, something boring. I didn't like anything mixed. I didn't like anything with sauce on it. Picky eater. And, you know, when I had the food and then when I was 9, like I was getting to, my grandmother had met with my sensei and saw all of the investment he had in me and the belief he had and knew how far I would go. And she wanted to make sure I continued doing these tournaments and doing everything else I had to do. So she had met with him to pay him whatever it would be to fulfill everything I needed at that point while she was still able to do so. So she did pay whatever the number was. I never did find out what that number is. And nor does it matter. But what matters is my grandmother took investment in me. And that meant more. So there was that. And I had an aunt and an uncle who taught me two very valuable lessons. One, I had an aunt who bent it over backwards and gave me pretty much anything I ever wanted. So it was responsible for me getting to places that not everyone in my family had. I went to every single museum and, you know, museums and fairs and all over the place. But on the, you know, flip side of that, I was also exposed to things like a horse track at a young age because they owned racehorses. And on one hand, you're like, oh, cool, you get to ride a horse. And I was riding a horse at 5 years old, which I didn't ride. I didn't learn how to ride a traditional bicycle until second grade. So I learned how to ride a horse before I learned how to ride a bicycle. And, you know, I told the story before, which is a true story. And it's also one of those things that sounds like a cliche, but it's a true story. You know, they had several racehorses, and they all had very different temperaments. I had a horse named Trailblazer. He was an awesome horse. It was black, and he was a thoroughbred. Then he would, you know, he did pretty all right, but was Trailblazer. Then my aunt and uncle had this other horse called Proven Pancake. Well, Proven Pancake was a jerk, as I called it. He was temperamental, and, you know, you rub him the wrong way if he wasn't feeling a certain kind of way. He was a horse, and he was not anything else. He had tried me once, and it was a point where I was going to go riding him. I've ridden every other horse, and they put me on Proven Pancake to ride him in the stable, but he bucked up. Threw me off of his back, and I laid in the stable in the pile of hay and all kinds of other things, which if you've ever been to a horse barn, you probably can imagine. And I was probably, six or seven at that point when that happened. And I remember thinking, well, that sucked. First of all, I was a small kid, and I got thrown off this massive horse. And you know, my uncle who was there, who watched, he said, listen, you can do two things. Either one, you can never get on again and probably never will, or you take the bull by the horn, so to speak. You get back on that horse and you show it that you're not afraid and that this is going to not be something you're going to do. So that's actually what I did. I picked myself up literally out of the hay and off the barn, and I got back on Proven Pancake. I didn't ride them long, for the record, but I did get back on Proven Pancake, and I would go on to ride several other horses, but I learned to kind of leave Proven Pancake alone. But I did get back on him just to show him that I was going to be intimidated. And I'm grateful for that life lesson, because you hear the story about, you know, what happens when you fall off a horse. Do you get up or do you stay on the ground? This is a real life example of that, and it was right there. And these are the life lessons you learn, you know. And when it came to why the F4L began, and one of the reasons why it had to really become a thing, is because where I was feeling that blood family respect anything about what a family should be. And what are the morals of the F4L? I've talked about it before many times, and it is part of the creed. To be F4L, you live life with love, care, and compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. That doesn't necessarily mean that we agree with everything the same way, and it doesn't mean that we are by any means pushovers. It also means we fight for love, care, and compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. And we support one another. We are a family. But what that means is your true friends, the ones who are there for you, the ones who share those qualities, that is your family. We all came from families that lacked some or all of those qualities of what a family should be. Looking back, someone asked me, well, wouldn't it have been nice to have, you know, your family sitting there cheering you on at these events? And looking back, I can't honestly say it would have, because one of the things that gave me the power on the mat when I was competing was my frustrations over the week would be brought up on the mat. And unlike a lot of other people, when I get angry, and I get truly upset, I don't go into rage. I become extremely focused on doing whatever I have to win. And basically, I come focused on ending it early and quick, just like everything else. Because it's not a Hollywood blockbuster film. Real life, you know, we're going to go in. Tomorrow is really when we're going to be looking back. I'm going to look back a little bit about my, background in martial arts, how it became to be, and the ups and downs, and, you know, the trip. And again, it's amazing to see how far it's come, where at one point people wouldn't be caught dead talking about it. Now it's, hey, look at this awesome thing. But in the same sense, I came from an era where you got your reputation by the old-fashioned way. Hey, did you hear about Sean, who was around, who was, you know, the kid from up there in Boston, who was around, you know, the short little Chihuahua guy. I don't know where the Chihuahua thing came from. I think I was called that once. I have been referred to as a pit bull or a dog of some kind, a Boston Terrier, because I'm from, you know, New England and Massachusetts. So, of course, a lot of these monikers would come around. I never gave myself any of those. I didn't really want any of those. I just was interested in competing and being there for my dojo, because that's ultimately what it was about for me. It was representing the people who were invested in me and being a team player, but also showing that I am not going to let someone else, you know, come in and try to hurt my school. That's how I looked at it. And going forward from there, because I knew there were other kids in school who didn't do martial arts, but also were kids who were either shy or quiet, or, you know, you would, you know, probably label the bully victim, because there was so much of that, and there was so little of, ultimately, there was really no one else to stand in a lot of the time. And, you know, the old story, where was your teacher? Listen, as I said before, bullies aren't stupid. They're not going to pick on the person in front of the teacher, especially now. They're going to find when they're going to be, they're going to either wait until either themselves and all of their friends can corner the person when there's no one around, or they're going to get them in a vulnerable place like the bathroom or the locker room, or when the teacher has to step out, because that happens in school for whatever reason. How long do people think it takes someone to bully someone, out of curiosity? And what level of bullying are we talking about? Sometimes bullying, yeah, can be physical. You know, they're putting their hands on someone else, but sometimes it's not, right? Especially now. Now there's all kinds of ways. Now there's, you know, via social media and whatnot. And I always refer to those people as trolls or keyboard warriors, the ones who are on, you know, social media who want to bully other people. Those are more keyboard warriors or, you know, trolls, as I just mentioned, people who are known for just being tough behind the screen, but in real life, you know, what are they going to do? But neither way is it appropriate, but it doesn't take someone long to bully someone else. It doesn't take someone long to get that jive in to make someone else miserable. Case in point, a great story I have about this. I remember it was seventh grade, and this is around the time when I became the official bully buster of the school, and I was going self-appointed. This is true. This is kind of where I'm talking about, and this is also one of those differences between if you see something that's wrong, you can either choose to ignore it and hope that it goes away or hope that someone else does something, or if you see something wrong and you know you can do something about it, then you need to step in. So this is one of those stories and one of those situations. I was in seventh grade, and I was already known as Jazz. This is something that was already appointed to me. And the reason, for those people who are wondering, why I got the name Jazz, and I've told this story before, is because, and no, it isn't because I like jazz music. That is definitely not the reason. The reason I was called Jazz is because, one, I was someone who was good in sports. I was good in academics. I was pretty funny. I was pretty talented as far as artistic goes. I was, you know, writing songs and short stories already. Friendar series was just beginning when I was about 12. I just started writing the first set of Friendar short stories that I was writing. I was writing poems, songs. So creativity, I was there. You know, sports-wise, I was one of the best athletes in the school. I don't think there was a sport that I didn't try at least. And I was a team player as far as that goes. I was dependable. And I would be someone who would give the battle cry and get everyone to go in the locker room behind the team and the sport and whatnot. And I was, you know, back then I was enjoying singing, and I would sing in class, which doesn't sound like the greatest source of time, but back then I, you know, was able to sing some of my own songs and some pop culture songs. And I guess people, you know, considered me to be a decent singer back then before, you know, puberty and all. And of course, also I began weightlifting when I was about 13. So around seventh grade when I started lifting. So because I wasn't one thing or another thing, I was full of all that jazz, which is where that name came from. I was multilingual and multicultured, I guess, so I was full of all that jazz. So anyway, there I was. It was science class. I remember this because science is one of my favorite subjects, still is. I still enjoy science. I've been out of school for many years, but I'm still learning about various animals and various scientific type of things. I don't think there's any part of science I'm not really into. You know, I enjoyed chemistry and things like that. And I was a geek, all right? What can I say? But I was also a smart geek, and I was one that can play sports as well, which is impressive for some. Anywho, there I am, science class, and there was a couple creeps, and they fit the mold for the classic school classroom bullies. Like, one was shorter than the other, and they both had all kinds of jokes that they thought was funny, and no one else, just funny to themselves. And they thought it was a good idea. First, they tried to, you know, this is the beginning of the school year, so everyone's kind of getting to know everyone. And this is, you know, middle school, you're really coming from various different elementary schools into one general area. So you have people from different schools coming into one area, and not everyone knows everyone and whatnot. So I guess these kids apparently thought that because they had played some flag football outside of school and just began that during the summer, that gave them a right to be kind of jerks to everyone else in class, or think that they were. So, truth be told, I don't know if they knew each other prior to school or whatnot. I do know they played flag football together going into that. But anywho, so that was in class. And, of course, first they started mouthing off to me, and obviously I wasn't putting up with that. I just told them, listen, grow up. And they clearly see it wasn't working on me, their, you know, tactics on trying to break me down, because I enjoy the human chess game more than a lot of other people. And sometimes, and I got to tell you, sometimes words are even better than actually physically, you know, getting physical with people, especially bullies. When you strip someone of their bully title and you make them to look like fools in front of everyone else and you flip the switch on them, number one, they hate that. And two, it gives you a sense of confidence. And that, I honestly got that confidence from martial arts, because I knew push come to shove, what are they going to do? And I've already sized these kids up. One's taller than the other one, which is, you know, common. So when they gave up on me, there was another kid in class. He was a smaller kid, and I think he had asthma as well, but I can't remember that too much. But this kid, he was a smaller kid, and he was across from me in the little desk. They went over, they started antagonizing him. And apparently they thought that he had large ears, so they started flicking his ears and being the classic you know, punks. And where is the teacher, you're asking? Well, the teacher was out taking care of a class, meeting with the principal who was in the hallway dealing with some other issue. And that is where the teacher was. And he was probably out of the room for a good maybe 4 or 5 minutes. And that's all this was. It was a 4 or 5 minute thing. And that's why I'm telling you, there is no set time limit on how long it takes someone to be a douche or how long it takes someone to act. So, it was probably 5 or 6 minutes the teacher was out in the hallway talking to the principal and whatever else they were dealing with. But in the classroom, he was these two schmucks, as I called them, who were giving this, you know, giving this other kid a hard time and, you know, hoping that they were entertaining anyone, but it was clear the only ones they were really entertaining is the two of them. And, you know, because the kid was smaller than them, they thought that they gave them a right to do so. And he had smaller, he had bigger ears or whatever. Unfortunately for them, I had actually known, I didn't know this young man particularly, but I knew his cousin from another school that I was in. And his cousin was a female, and she was actually a really nice girl. And one of the few people who was at my only birthday party was his cousin. So because I'm loyal to people, and also because I don't like bullying, I'm in a situation where I see these two schmucks giving this smaller kid a hard time. I got a couple of choices here. I can sit here and watch this and just watch this and do nothing and hope the teacher comes in. I can run out of the classes. Hey, teacher, go look at what's going on in here. Or I can do something about it. And so I went with the only thing that was the only right thing to do. I called them out and I said, listen, what the heck are you guys doing? There's two of you guys. You guys are so cool. And basically, you know, one of the reasons why they quickly learned not to, you know, talk with me is because I held them accountable and I made them feel like idiots. Sometimes intelligence is even bigger than my rest of my weapons. So, again, words of Chuck Norris, knowledge is power, power is a weapon. Be careful what you use with it. That was a quote from him directly. Anywho, so these kids are giving him a time. I called them out on the nonsense. I said, what do you guys think you're doing? Like, who are you impressing? What are you guys, the Conan O'Brien, the Andy Richter of the school? And, of course, you know, they said, oh, wait, you probably don't even know who that is because you're probably in bed when this stuff happens, if you have cable. So, you know, this is me being sarcastic and also making fun of the bullies. What does this do? Does it make me a bully? No, because what it does is it takes away their power. It strips them of their tough guy status in front of the rest of the class. Because guess what? When they were tormenting this poor small kid, no one thought it was funny. No one else did anything else, and they just kind of kept their heads in their books. It's science class. And not on my watch. So I held them to task, and I said, you know, there's two of you guys. Both of you guys are bigger than him by yourselves, but there's two of you guys, and you need one of you guys to flick one ear and the other. What's the matter with you guys? So after making them, you know, after giving them a tongue lashing and holding them accountable for being idiots. And by the way, I got the laughs from the class because what I was saying and doing was what everyone else was wanting to do. This no one could or want to. And then you're in the situation, well, what if they did this? What if they do that? You always have to read the situation. If they really wanted to be tough, they would have done something already. But the fact that they were flicking an ear and picking on the smallest guy in class, not the biggest guy, and I wasn't the biggest guy either, and technically they were both bigger than me, is what I pointed out to them. I said, listen, you guys are both bigger than me, but you're not over here flicking my ears. Why is that? Is that because if you flick my ears, you know that I'm going to flick you both back, and I'm going to take him and stick you up his rear end? Is that why? And of course, you know, I'm in seventh grade, and I'm talking like I'm Steven Seagal or, you know, someone else. But the reality is my confidence level was at the sense where if I had to, I would definitely try. But, you know, obviously they felt like idiots because I made them look like idiots in front of all the other classmates. Everyone thought that they were the – everyone laughed the fact that I called them out on being tough, the twiddle dumb and twiddly D. I called them Ren and Stimpy because they thought they were the only ones who got their jokes. And I said, well, the unfortunate thing is, Ren and Stimpy, that your show was canceled a long time ago. So why don't you guys go back to your seats and do what you're supposed to do. Become smarter so you don't become a mindless dog and a mindless cat. So needless to say, those kids never bothered that kid again. And years later, that kid would end up on my soccer team years later, or football for me, and football for us, actually. We had the same coach. We both looked at it as football because that's what he called it. And that is the story of when you need to take action and why sometimes in life you have to be able to read a situation and you can either act or just sit there. And much like my mother, and my mother was one of these people too who didn't just, you know, watch something happen. If she knew something was wrong, regardless what shape she was going to do something about it. And she did. I can tell you that. But that's kind of where I cemented my legacy as the official, unofficial Bully Buster, as I was someone who was never going to let someone else feel poorly. I wasn't going to let someone get tormented because they're smaller and weaker. And that kid, grew to respect me because I stood up for him, and so did the rest of the class. And those bullies, by the way, whatever happened to them? Well, they stopped bullying for one thing in that class anyway, because if they didn't, I would make sure I held them. All I had to do was give them a look, and they were afraid they were going to end up on the Ed Sullivan Show, as I used to call it. And if anyone else, and I told them, I said, if you do it again, I'm going to put you on the stage and make everyone look like the tar and feather that you are. So that's kind of where that comes from. And it comes from my confidence level, because I knew I could take care of myself, but I also knew that knowing the situation, knowing these kids aren't actually going to want to fight, that's something that I need to know. But I also know why they were doing and how they were going to. Now, that's not saying that every situation is the same. Because later in high school, there was definitely those kids who were physical bullies who would, torment younger, smaller people. Not on my watch. And that's kind of, at that point, I was already jazz vengeance at that point because of, the 16 fights in one day. And yes, that is true. I'm not proud of it, but it is part of my legacy. It is something that I am known for, and it is part of my past. I can't change the past. I can take the things I've done and learn from it. But what I walked away with is the nickname Jazz Vengeance because of that. 16 fights in one day. And it was all because I was getting vengeance for my friends who were getting tormented while I was taking care of personal family matters and getting emancipated at the time. So that's a real thing. So there you go. And that brings you to another point is, sometimes you have to know, who is being supportive and who is not in life. And there's so many people out there, and there are so many people who you think are your friends, so many people who you think support you. But in the reality is, how many of them can you rely on? How many of them can you call up and say, hey, I'm having a hard day right now? How many of them can do that of you? Are you willing to listen to someone else? And these are the things that, people contemplate. What is a real friend? What is a real relationship? Who is a real supporter? And one of the downfalls of social media, and one of the biggest, takeaways of social media is where it's great to network and get to meet people from all over the place, there is people who aren't there for the same reasons you are, and there are people who aren't as pure in motives. I add things and I want to help people make their goals happen and achieve their dreams. If by using their names and by creating them as a wrestling character for a video game can get them notoriety and get them, get some eyeballs on these real life people, then absolutely I'll do that. It's the least I can do. But that is as far as my, you know, interactions. It's a professional basis because I want them to succeed because they can and they will. And like when we had Philip Ricardo on last week, we talked about being able to kind of read how many people are wanting to do what it is that they're set for and how many of them don't want to get into whatever it is that they want to get. The people who are faking it and the people who want it. I used to see it in everything, in sports and everywhere else, right? You know, in wrestling school, this is a true story too. Pro wrestling school, a lot of people like to laugh and joke about my pro wrestling, right? And when I tell people who I competed with in MMA and freestyle and the karate and martial arts and stuff, when I told them I was going to stop doing the freestyle tournaments and I was going to be doing the pro wrestling school, they made fun of me. Go figure. Or they made a joke, oh, that's that fake stuff. Listen, here's the reality of it. Yeah, I enjoyed my time in martial arts, and I know a lot of things about that. But if you think that being a pro wrestler means that you're not tough or that it's takes no skill or doesn't take any kind of physicality or whatnot, then you'd be wrong. Because let me tell you, as a wrestler, we get the same kind of questions. Is wrestling real? Does it hurt? Do you know so-and-so? These are the certain questions we get as pro wrestlers. The other one is, that's because you can't really fight, right, is another one of my favorites. But in reality, it is. There's no faking gravity. Anyone who has ever been to school who knows anything about logic and gravity, what goes up must come down. That's a law of nature. Just like I always say, because that is a law of nature, what goes up must come down. It also means that you can only go so far down before you have to go back up again, because that is also in the same law in physics. And that being said also, there is no faking gravity. From the top rope, the top turnbuckle to the mat, you're probably looking at about, 8 feet above the ring. Then you're talking about a person who is anywhere between 5 to 6+ feet tall. So now that 6 foot person is on top. Let's take me, for example, I'm 6 feet tall. And on the top rope, which is already established to be what? 4 feet. Let's see, top rope. Yeah, you're up there a good, from the top rope to the bottom for the ring is about 5 feet. Yeah, 5 feet there. You're yourself 6 feet. You go to the top rope, right? And you jump. And a lot of people have seen this. And sometimes you'll see the person hit the person. Sometimes they'll miss. Let me tell you, there's no faking gravity. Once you get on that top rope, you fall, you're going to fall. That's gravity taking over. There's no ropes. There's no net. There's no safety harness. You're taking your safety in risk by doing that particular thing. Of course, when you're properly trained and stuff like that, you know how to safely do that by all means. And I think for someone like me, I'm 6 feet tall and whatnot. And at that time, I was just coming into an era where it was just priorly a land of giants. If it wasn't for guys like Bret Hart, I guess I sort of got to say Shawn Michaels, even though I don't really agree with a lot of the things he did early days. But I can definitely refer to people like Shawn Michaels and the Guerreros and the Mysterios of the world, who kind of the Owen Harts, the British Bulldogs. These are people who are massive athletes. Kurt Angles of the world, who are, under 6 feet tall or around 6 feet tall, not the most, not the Hulk Hogan's who are 6 foot six, 6 foot nine, but they are shorter in stature, but their conditioning, their work ethic made them you know, who they were. And that's honestly one of the reasons why guys like Bret Hart I have a lot more respect for, because that's something that I can relate to. Now, do I need to go to the ropes several hundred times? No, and that's one of the reasons why modern wrestling makes a lot of mistakes. You don't need to do all that stuff. If I'm jumping off the top rope and I connect, the match has to be over because that makes the most sense. Because I'm not going to the rope for no apparent reason, unless I'm, you know, made to lose. So when the question comes in, is wrestling real? Well, right up until you hit the mat is what I usually like to say. Are the storylines, you know, concise, you know, the storylines definitely can be, you know, fabricated, I guess, in some cases. And the characters being portrayed can be kind of theatrical. But don't take away the athleticism and don't mistake the fact that, you know, because you believe and because of the theatrics of it, that it is not a physical thing and that injuries can happen, or that these guys are all do this because they can't really fight, you would be wrong. Another good friend of mine in both UFC and in wrestling, the great Ken Shamrock. If you listen to Ken Shamrock, who was one of the pioneers of UFC before anyone else, before the Conor McGregors of the world and the current day gladiators that are UFC staples for a lot of young people now, guys like Ken Shamrock, Dan the Beast Severn, Tito Ortiz, Dan Pewter, and all these guys set that bar back then. If you were to ask Ken Shamrock, and I can tell you this because I've heard him talk about this and I've talked to him about this, most of his injuries in his career came from pro wrestling, not the UFC. Because it's a different case. In the UFC, you're the one who's trying to fight. You're fighting for your life. Win or lose, right? You have control over that, or you can try to have control of that. But in wrestling, you have to have you have to trust the other person you're fighting against in order to make it work. And without that, that's where injuries happen. And Ken Shamrock is someone who can talk to you about being a legitimate tough guy in the UFC, you know, going over and doing pancreas, and then going to wrestling, and he'll tell you that most of his injuries came from pro wrestling, not the UFC. And that's because of how hard and demanding it is. And you want to talk about, you know, everything else. So people who like to undermine or diminish pro wrestling as something that is not as physical or whatever else, all honesty, it's like any other sport. Don't knock it until you've done it. This is a mindset that people who obviously think that, you know, because they train in something or they do something somewhere else, they're better than something else. There are many martial arts in the world. I'm someone who can appreciate people for their work ethic, no matter what it is they train in. I'm cross-trained in multiple forms of martial arts and disciplines, but I respect things that aren't part of my disciplines as well. Do I question some, you know, giving a black belt to someone younger than I believe they are worthy to, that I guess I have some, I don't understand that part of it. But I definitely believe in tradition and I believe in respecting each other's differences. So, you know, Chuck Kudo, I did Muay Thai, I did Kenpo, I did multiple other forms of martial arts in, you know, as I said, Muay Thai, Kenpo, Judo, Chukudo, you know, all of those things combined. Kenpo, those are the things that I excelled in. They're different disciplines for those people who don't know. And in Chukudo, which is where Chuck Norris founded that we started a little later in life. But when Chukudo started, that, you know, a lot of people who look at that like, oh, well, it's just Chuck Norris karate. But do you realize what's involved in that discipline? Because Chuck Norris is someone who is trained in multiple styles as well. He's not just one discipline. He founded his own, but he's done others as well. And, you know, people will have validity on these Hollywood, you know, tough guys, so to speak. And I can tell you, certain one, that you know those, you can see also the ones who are real tough guys the versus the ones who, you know, talk a good game. You know, a lot of people don't like Steven Seagal. They don't like Jean-Claude Van Damme. They don't like Chuck Norris. They don't like Bruce Lee. Well, if you don't like these people, but you're going to all these movies and you're doing martial arts, then what are you doing it for? Because I'm going to be honest with you guys. Most people don't know about these, you know, philosophies, these styles. If it wasn't for someone seeing someone do those things and say, that looks cool, I want to do that. Because ultimately, if it wasn't for something to introduce this to you, you wouldn't even know it existed. And someone to, you know, let's take, you know, a martial art, just pick one. How about jiu-jitsu, which is a very popular one? And tomorrow, when we have the Jits Kings on, we can even talk to them about this little bit here, where there's going to be multiple schools who will teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? Different clubs, different avenues, right? But I can bet you anything that someone's going to say one's better than the other. And then these events, which is why we have these tournaments, by the way, in case you were wondering. These events happen because you want to show that your school and what your training does. And that's what you're doing. You're representing your school and your discipline with others. And the only way to find that out is to compete. And that's where the tournaments begin, ladies and gentlemen. But in general, I think you should always respect anyone who's also training to do whatever it is that you're doing. Or respect others who are training in something else. And honestly, if you're training in martial arts, you should probably respect those who do dance and those who do other sports, because a lot of those things can be intertwined. A lot of people were shocked when they heard that Jean-Claude Van Damme, who's done Muay Thai and other karate things, he's won karate and kickboxing tournaments, but he also incorporates ballet. And, you know, all the macho guys out there in the world, oh, my goodness, he does ballet. He's not tough. Well, yeah, he does some ballet, but he's also, he won a few tournaments, too, from martial arts, and he puts that discipline. And he's also a bodybuilding champion, too, because of his work ethic as far as training goes. That's Jean-Claude Van Damme. Now, am I going to be someone who's going to say, well, I don't really like Jean-Claude Van Damme versus Steven Seagal? Do I think Steven Seagal is just a guy who just shoots his mouth off? No, I think Steven Seagal, who's founded Hapkido, who back in the 80s and the 90s, when he was, you know, his films were going, we used to call him Captain Crunch. And people who want to question him, I just saw recently there was a video of him at a UFC event, and someone was coming, and you should see. A lot of people laugh at Steven Seagal. He's a big guy. He's a lot of weight. Steven Seagal at his size will still, you know, take someone out 15 times smaller, quicker than he is because of his ethic. I watched him do this UFC thing just recently. He was at a ringside and some guy was coming, and he must have batted around 15,000 weight shots. He was just padding all over the place. And the guy would have been done if Steven Seagal had wanted to. It was just a little sparring, friendly session, but goes to show you that don't be so quick to judge someone else on whatever it is. Now, Cobra Kai, Karate Kid, these are the movies that we had in the 80s, which people who did martial arts absolutely despised. Me, myself, I was not overly fond of the Karate Kid movies, truth be told, because it set a standard, and it gave the impression that, you know, if you wash a few cars and paint a fence and you help some little old guy with his chores around the house, you're going to get a black belt in karate for that. When me, who at the time Karate Kid came out and I saw the Karate Kid and the ones that followed, I'm like, get out of here. It doesn't take, you don't get a, and if you remember, it was only like 2 weeks. Really did any of those things. And in 2 weeks, Miyagi goes, oh, what belt is he? Oh, he's a black belt. And if it was just that simple, oh, yeah, he's a black belt, just because he washed a few cars or whatever. Listen, katas are part of the old karate technique things, but if you were to do that crane kick in a karate tournament, which they referenced in Cobra Kai, it would be illegal in a regular karate tournament if it was straight-up karate. And also, if you didn't know that that was coming, if you're the opponent, you walked into that, then you're obviously not ready for this fight, and you can't be the most, you know, the toughest guy or the champion if you are so foolish to walk into something like that. So that's the other part of that. So people like me who's done the martial arts, who can look at these things, I'm like, oh, appreciate the art for what it is, but also be able to, you know, take away the fact and fiction. I'm excited to have the Jits Kings on tomorrow because they run what looks to be the most professionally run tournament I've ever seen, at least in recent days. And, you know, a lot of the people who we feature on our YouTube wrestling show are, you know, are featured on there as well. And I can't wait to find out how these guys, you know, what it's like for these guys to watch these futures of whatever they're going to do and whatnot. But, you know, also me, myself, who's, you know, currently training and has trained and getting ready to return to various things of MMA or whatnot, well, I've been helping out the dojo where I started years ago, as I mentioned. One of the things that, you know, my old classmate wanted me to do is to show the students, talk to the students and get them ready for tournaments. Because I am the master of human chess. I love chess. Now, that's, which is actually funny, because in real chess, I'm not overly fond of it. Human chess is one of my favorite games in the world. And I've talked about this on the show before, about the art of being able to read an opponent, being able to kind of put a strategy together, looking for the weakness. What are you going to have to do? How long is this going to go for? And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I think it was last week, I talked about, actually it was over the weekend, I think, that I talked about Mason the Hammer Adele, of the Adele Boys. And there was a video that he had, you know, was up on his Instagram. And it was the exact example of what I talk about, when you can read an opponent and you can see who's going to win based on how they're, you know, the different fighters are. That's the video you should watch. If you get a chance to check out the Adele Boys or Mason the Hammer Adele on Instagram or whatever, go check out this video. It's from this past weekend at the the big event they had over the PANS over there in Florida, which a lot of people were part of that, or there were, you know, other places. But what you'll see is, you know, one hand you have a person, they're both in a cage, but one person in the cage, it looks like they're dancing, like their footwork looks like they're dancing prior to getting ready to fight, not looking at the, you know, in the direction of his opponent, kind of looking down, around, dancing, probably paying more attention to his footwork, almost like he's wants to make sure his dancing footsteps are right when he's doing whatever it is he's doing. Then you go, the camera pans to the opposite side where Mason is, and he's pacing the cage, staring at his opponent like an animal. That would tell me and indicate that Mason is going to destroy this kid. I have nothing, I don't know who the kid is, and I'm sure he's a very fine young man, and I'm sure he's just as tough. But here's what I'm going to tell you. That video right there is exactly the one you want to show when you want to see the difference between how to read your opponent to know who's going to win and who's going to lose. Who is going to be the more dominant person? I've said it before on this show, and I've said it before, and I'll talk about it more tomorrow. One of my strategies was to read the opponent before I even got to the ring. Before we even got to the mat, I already knew how I was going to beat them, what their weaknesses were, what their strengths were, and what I had to do differently to adapt. Especially when you're doing tournaments like we used to do, when you used to have several matches in one thing. I don't think it's done that way now. I think it's you kind of face the person you're facing against and then it's kind of done, I think. We'll have to find out, because the Jitkins would know. We'll talk to them tomorrow about how they do it. But in our terms in their day, you had to, you know, first beat one person in your class, then you got to beat another person after that, and then you go out to the finals. It was like you'd have to fight three times in one night, one day, sometimes more depending on how many people were there. So that's generally how it went. It didn't go by weight class. It went by your belt ranking and by what you're trained in, actually, also. Because I did freestyle tournaments, which basically would turn into what MMA is now. Because what freestyle was basically, there was not, you know, people who competed in those were not in just one or the other. Because as mentioned, I studied in jujitsu, excuse me. I studied in Kenpo, Judo, and Muay Thai, most of it, and then Chukkudo later. And those are the kind of disciplines I would adapt to and utilize. And because of the various differences in styles, I would compete against people who are also cross-trained, and maybe Taekwondo, Judo, and something else, or Tusundu and some other things, you know, Kung Fu and something else. You know, so there's different variations. Jiu-Jitsu is kind of intertwined into Chukkudo. A lot of people don't know, but there's a lot of that. But also Judo, there's a lot of submissions and so forth in Judo as well. And if someone ever asks which I prefer, the knockouts versus the submissions, or the pointage, I always go for the submissions. There's something more satisfying in the submission than there is in the other. So there's that. That's for me. But anyway, go watch that video, because that's exactly what the example is you should be seeing. That is what, you know, case in point, what I'm talking about. When you have a person who is not fully into the match, or they're having other things going on, but they're not looking at their opponent, they're focused on their footwork, or they're focused on other things, you know that person's not there for that fight. Do you see the other person across the cage? He's staring at the person. He's walking that cage. He's pacing for the moment to say go, and he is not taking the eyes off his opponent. That right there is the animal instinct, and that right there is the, quote, eye of the tiger. There you go. I looked at I worked in a reference there. But that is the strategy. And when it comes to shoot fighting, and when it comes to, you know, being able to grapple and being able to strike, you know, I talked yesterday about someone who I've been seeing, you know, been watching recently, who's probably one of the best shooters I've seen in a long time. Again, hopefully he'll come on here eventually to talk about it himself. So we'll have him come in and talk about that and some other people. But, you know, a lot of my people who I feature on the thing are excited at the fact that the Jits Kings are coming on tomorrow, and I think I'm going to be great for me. One of the things I got to say is they have a great eye for knowing talent and being able to sign the best talent and whatnot. And, you know, I respect those who are there to elevate other people. We can have something so organized, and that's a pretty big thing, you know, and when I think back to my days of competing in the freestyle tournaments, you know, they weren't as fluid as this, and I've competed them all up and down the East Coast. And, you know, back then, you know, you'd have to go at your school and, you know, your sensei or whatever, and that's how that would work. And you travel and you compete and you go back, train, eat, sleep, conquer, repeat, kind of a routine. And I think that's become a meme for some reason now, that whole trope, but that's reality, how it works. Conditioning is important. Mental capacity is important. Having a clear head when you compete. I think also having the personality to be able to withhold a lot of these things, the personality that sets you apart from all the other fighters. Do you have a personality, or you're just this bland person who's just staring, just sitting there? Because, yeah, you might be the toughest person out there. I mean, he might be one of the best fighters in the world, but if you're not standing out to anyone, then it's just doing moves and winning. And the differences between, like, the beginning of the fighters on a UFC card, for example, you think about the people who are standing out right now, guys like the Conor McGregors of the world, or the Khabibs of the world, the Ken Shamrocks. These are people who are animated. These are people who are elevated. These are people who are exciting to watch, right? They have personalities. How are they going to hold themselves? The young guy, the Irish guy, Paddy, who was just over the UFC over the weekend. What an amazing dude he is. He just has some big thing. I know he's having a rough time right now as well, I heard. But personality is what stands out, and that's why people are attracted. That's why people support those people, because of their personality. The Mena boys, Henry and Jairo Mena, who are the young men from San Antonio, Texas. By the way, they've also competed on Jits Kings, just like the other people I just mentioned before. And they get that, and I can see that that's something that they have incorporated, and that is smart. But they've also adapted other things, which is making them more well-rounded as well, as they're incorporating boxing and they're incorporating other techniques to make them the best fighters. And you know what? Good for them. And they're at that confidence level, and they're not afraid of facing each other. And that is something also that, you know, there's certain, like I said before, when you can step in and go toe-to-toe with your own family, then you're going to be real. That's going to be the biggest test, because are you going to be able to go full-fledged with your family, or are you going to go light on them? And can you defeat your younger or older person, and how is that going to work? If you're a real fighter and you're a real competitor, you got to be able to get on that ring. And whoever's standing across from you, blood or no, you treat them the same. But after the deal's over, if you show the respect that you should be no matter what, you should be shaking hands and, you know, thank you for the match or whatever. And when it's your family, you know, you leave it on the mat. Always leave it on the mat. Whatever happens on the mat stays on the mat. The minute the bell rings and you're off the mat, you're family. That's, remember that no matter who you are. I didn't have any other family who did a lot of these things. I had a cousin that wanted to go into martial arts or did some karate. He didn't like the tournaments. And then later in life, I had another cousin who studied something called Tama. And I told that story before about how the guy who ran that school just rubbed me the wrong way, because when I asked him which discipline he would like me to use, because I didn't know anything about what Tama was, and he told me that he wanted me to, because we were supposed to do like a sparring session for the school, for the students, because my son's birthday or whatever. And I didn't know what Tama was exactly, but I asked him, what discipline would you like me to use, since I didn't have Tama. I knew a couple other things, obviously. But he said, oh, just bring it all. I'm a master of Tama, so it doesn't really matter what you know. And I took that as a little bit more insulting, because, you know, I don't know what this Tama thing is, but, you know, if you actually know what Chukkudo is, Chukkudo is Chuck Norris' style. That incorporates several other arts itself. A lot of people don't know what's incorporated in there unless you've done it. Because his, you know, jujitsu, there's some moves in there. Some jujitsu's adapted into there. Karate is adapted in there. Kenpo's adapted in there. Tsumdu is adapted in there. Some kung fu elements to what makes Chukkudo Chukkudo. Good luck to someone who wants to kind of, you know, do that alone. But then you add in Kenpo and Judo and Muay Thai and then Greco-Roman wrestling. And to tell someone, oh, yeah, just bring it all. It doesn't matter. I'm master of this one style. And we were going by points, by the way. That was how we did it. And, you know, within 4 points, I won within 15 seconds of the thing. I was actually disappointed, because I should have had more points in 15 seconds or whatever. But it was quick and easy. But that was because I took that as insulting, that he was quick to dismiss everything that I had been trained in versus his one style. I had respect for him for prior to that, before that came up. And that's when, you know, I had to do what is respectful, and that's by making him humble. So I did. And remember, no matter where you're going, you're representing your school, you're representing yourself, most importantly. At the end of the day, whenever you're competing against anything, whether what the sport is, no matter what it is your goal in general is, if your heart isn't into it, you really have to evaluate if this is in for you, if you want this. And not everyone is. And it doesn't matter if it's combat sports, if it's arts and leisure, whatever the case may be. If your heart isn't into something that you want to do, then you might have to reevaluate what it is that you want to do. Yes, it's easy to say, I want to do something. It looks like fun. And then when do you get there? I think one of the biggest examples I can use is I asked the students at my old school, how many people came here because they saw everyone do things on Cobra Kai and said, that looked cool. Almost everyone raised their hands. And then I said, so how many people in here after doing this now can see that Cobra Kai is strictly TV, not real at all? And then everyone's hands went up again. So that is a fun one. So cool stuff. Guys, I only have a little bit left. And rather than me go on for, well, I got almost 3 minutes left, I'm going to let you guys early. So tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our friends at Jits Kings Promotions will be coming on here to talk about how they have adapted and really are innovative in the martial art community and the amazing warriors that they're featuring. We're going to talk about them and how they started and celebrate the ones who they, you know, the warriors that they have watched grow like we have. And we have some other people too. Dead Sled, the coffee makers, we're planning on having them come in very soon. We're just kind of finding a time and waiting on some other people as well. So, folks, no matter where you're going in life, just make sure you remember one thing. Put all your work in. Don't listen to what everyone else in the world says. Just follow your own heart. The only one at the end of the day you really have to listen to is yourself. The only one you have to believe in is yourself. So you can find me at WOW Dream Matches. I don't know why I did that. My email is WOW Dream Matches, DREIMMATCHES @gmail.com. You can reach me at email if you want to come on this show and talk about what your amazing things you're doing and whatnot at the FRL headquarters, where we live the FRL way with love, care, and compassion, and standing respect for each other's differences. And you can find me on Instagram at F4L Icon, SEANJAZZSTEVENS, Sean Jazz Stevens. That's me. And one at the end of that. So everyone, no matter where you're going in life, get it done and may all your dreams come true. I'm the F4L Icon saying peace, everybody.